Hey, this is James from SurvivalPunk.com.
And this is Couch Potato Mike from CouchPotatoMike.com and SurvivalPunk.com.
Mr. Show Off?
Yeah. How you been doing?
I've been in a really great mood this week. I had some people comment on it, which is neat. I have no idea why.
They commented on your mood?
Yes, that I was in a swell mood. Speaking of being swell, this marks our 1 year anniversary show.
Happy anniversary, Poopy.
To us, yeah. 1 year that we've managed to keep doing this thing, which in podcast years, we've easily done like 100 years of podcasting.
Yeah, that's like much more than dog years.
Yeah. I mean, we don't have Jack Spirico's legacy of doing 5 episodes a week. God forbid. We actually kicked that idea around for a while, though.
Yeah, we kicked up around the idea of doing, like, 20-minute episodes 5 days a week.
Yeah, and then focusing on the different aspects of the show.
Like having a news episode and then having a nutrition episode and shit like that and review episode.
I mean, all intents and purposes, you could listen to one episode 20 minutes a day. Whatever. But we like the one-hour show because we're Gabby. We like the, and we've heard from you guys, and if you disagree, send me an email, james@surrealpunk.com, that the variety of the show is what keeps you interested, that there's usually something in there for everybody. There's some survival stuff, there's some homestead stuff, there's some, it covers the news, which really is the only way that I get news, because I hate the news.
There's some delicious angry rants for those out there, you, the anarchists and all of us.
Yeah, anarchists. I did a post on the income tax and you. I caught income tax and you. Because I had a friend on Facebook sort of ranting about the income tax that, you know, his wife is a co-manager at a big box retail store, which means she makes pretty decent money. Mm-hmm. To get to be that, you kind of got to bust your ass, though. And you kind of got to give up your life and work really hard. So it's money you deserve. And you sell your soul to get there. Which, of course, means she's in a much higher tax bracket. So she's fucked three ways from Tuesday.
Oh, good God.
He was sort of bitching about, you're punished because you work hard and you get more. And basically, one of the things I thought about was if I would have went to that higher level, it would have knocked me up a tax bracket so hard that it would have taxed away most of the $20,000 raise it would have been to jump to that pay grade.
Huh.
Which would have made it, you work more hours and you kind of get screwed and not get much more money, which is really ridiculous. But he went on to say that, it would be okay as he thought of paying taxes as the income tax as an investment in your country, but he doesn't agree with the country. He thinks the country is being stupid, so he thinks it's a poor investment. To which I replied, it's not an investment. You're not paying taxes to your government. You're paying interest payments to the Federal Reserve Bank, which is a private company.
Yep. And the Federal Reserve is about as federal as Federal Express.
Yeah. I sort of delve into that a little bit, which is a whole rabbit hole. You could spend your whole life doing research on the Federal Reserve conspiracy.
Yeah, we could do a 4-episode-long series all about that crap, at least.
Yeah, so I'm like, it's not an investment. You're not paying taxes. The things that you think you're paying taxes for, that's not what your income tax is even going for. It doesn't go to fix the roads. It doesn't go to schools. It doesn't,
it's all interest.
It's not
payments. Welfare.
Yeah, that's all tax. Oh, my God. That's all extra taxes we pay, like sales taxes and property taxes. Property taxes go to schools, which is weird how that works out.
Yeah, that makes not a lot of sense.
So, wait. And he gave me an idea for a show, and I need to write it down. Our next show will be a libertarian anarchist thought process episode where we're gonna mentally play out the arguments why anarchy wouldn't work and how they would work out.
Okay.
I hate when I tell people I'm a libertarian or anarchist, the first thing they say is, well, without the government, who would fix the roads? And then I flip a table over and scream at them.
And then they're like, calm down, you damn violent hippie.
Yeah, you damn violent hippie. But anyway, good week. You and me went to go see this Doctor Who thing in Nashville.
Yes, we went to the Wibbly Wobbly Weekend at the Adventure Science Center last night.
Yeah, which was a decent event. Lots of people were dressed up. We got pictures in the TARDIS, which really kind of made it worth it. So
had a couple of really, really strong high points, and I honestly was disappointed by a bunch of it. It just seemed like the people showing up for the event put more effort into being there than the event put into having people be there. But they did have a full-scale remote-controlled Dalek that was just awesome.
Yes.
Which, and scream, exterminate!
Yeah, which was fun. I mean,
are you the doctor?
We got to see a Dalek. We got to stand inside a TARDIS. That was really, I mean, that's, yeah, that was the high point.
Yeah, the pictures will be up on my buddy here's Facebook page and whatnot.
Yep. So what do we got coming up today?
Well, before we get into what's coming up today, I just would like to tell everybody over at CouchPotatoMike.com. I've recently, I don't know if I mentioned this in the last episode, but we just recently published another podcast on there that's called Sonic Screwballs. The next episode will be called The Real Sonic Screwballs because, well, we didn't do enough fact-checking about whether or not that name had been used before. But it's basically a running commentary track for various episodes of the show Doctor Who, and we're the second episode. We're probably going to be recording right after we record this. Yeah. So look forward to I'm not sure if I should just call it a different podcast or just clump it all under Couch Potato Mike Explains It All. What do you think I should do?
My suggestion would be to make a new podcast, a new webpage for SEO purposes and whatnot. Because, I mean, I'd make a new web page devoted just to Doctor Who and to market towards that audience. And one of the problems with Survival Punk is there's too many things I'm interested in, and I try to bring them all into the show and into the website, which sort of hampers my niche marketing.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I can't – I mean, you know, some – it's sort of paleo and survival with a punk attitude. So some of the people are turned off by different aspects. You know, the people it does click with, though, are my hardcore fans, and I love them.
Can't we all just get along, guys?
So you get better marketing by strictly knowing who you're marketing to and going after them. So I'm going after survival, nutrition-interested punk people.
Well, I'm going to just be going after, like, pop culture junkies who love knowledge for knowledge's sake.
Yeah. So I'd really separate them now.
Yeah, but I'm still really wanting to keep it all under the same thing.
Yeah. Well, you said you pretty much abandoned Couch Potato Mike Explains It All, your first
one. I'm not abandoning it. Like I said, I'm still going to put episodes up of it. It's just, I'm not as passionate about that as I am about other things. But I want to try to bring those other things. I was just going to make it basically. See, I started out wanting to make Couch Potato Mike Explains It All about all sorts of, like, weird crap. And I'm thinking about just turning it into a pop culture show.
Yeah.
Because I'm a big pop culture show. And, I mean, I'm also a Doctor Who enthusiast, Rubik's Cube enthusiast, you know, Kevin Smith enthusiast.
Yeah.
Yeah. I obsess about a lot of stuff.
Yep.
You might need to see somebody over that.
No. There's a market out there for it.
Oh, yeah. And if you're in that market, head on over to CouchPotatoMike.com. All right, but coming up on the show today, we're going to be talking about the EPA ban on wood-burning stoves. Cheap gas could be a Trojan horse for America. We're going to be doing a little intro to Paleo Noobs. Going to be talking about the Breatime Gourmet Cured Meats. The Eat Fat Diet that will make you thin. We're also going to be having our Permaculture Minute and our Wild Edible of the Week. But before we jump into all the frivolity that is the show, Survival Punk Podcast, we need to talk a little bit about some good folks over at some very nice websites, all of which you can find on the banner on the right-hand side of survivalpunk.com. And let's kick it off with our oldest and dearest sponsor, JMBullion.com.
Yes, JMBullion.com, the place for all your gold and silver needs online. Free shipping.
Shipping?
Yep. You have to make all the orders are required to be over $100, which if you're stockpiling silver, that's really not that big of an issue.
Yeah, that you can add that up really quick.
Yeah. You know, and at somewhere around $17 a coin for an ounce of silver.
It's like six coins and you're already over the limit.
Right, so there you go.
Well, not limit, but over the minimum.
Threshold. They've got some really neat designs, which is kind of, I mean, it's not a big deal, but it interests me. I don't like to collect the same coins over and over and over. I like coins from different nations. If anyone out there has a China 1 ounce silver panda, is willing to trade for another ounce or a year membership of the Survival Punk Army, get with me and we'll do a trade because that's one of the coins I'm missing from my collection and I'll trade with you or bargain with you or whatever.
Yeah, just contact him, James at
survivalpunk.com. But for all your other silver needs, please go to jmbullion.com, click banner in the margin.
like I said earlier.
Yes.
And now on to CampingSurvival.com.
CampingSurvival.com for all your bug out and bug in needs. They've got things like the fish antibiotics, which should be a part of your prepping needs for the long-term storage. The life straw to purify your water and everything else you could think of. CampingSurvival.com.
To give a moment to the great people over at Mai Tai Exotic Asian Coffee.
Yes, Mai Tai Exotic Asian Coffee, which is amazing coffee. Some of the best coffee I've ever had. The espresso and the pumpkin spice are my favorites, by the way.
Gee, I've never heard you say that before.
I know, they're my favorite. I've got some green coffee at home from them I need to roast. And what I like about Mai Tai Coffee is that they give a lot back to the community in Thailand, where they donate a portion of the proceeds to help an orphanage there that provides all the medical, housing, and schooling needs for these kids over there. And they pay their workers that pick the coffee trees a fair wage so they can support their families.
Do you really want to take the food out of the mouths of starving Asian orphans? I don't think so. So you know what you need to do? Find that banner on the right-hand side of SurvivalPunk.com. Click on Mai Tai Exotic Asian Coffee's link and have a cup of Joe that is just better than any that you've probably ever had before.
Yes.
And that brings us right on down to WellFoodCo.com.
Yes. WellFoodCo by John Wellborn and his wife. And they've created some amazing foods over there. The Paleo MRE, which is really good to take out on like short camping trips, hiking trips, day packs. With Rob Wolf, they developed a carne bar, which is amazing.
Now, what's the carne bar again?
It's sort of a meat-based, you know, protein bar instead of, like, you know, some other flours and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And it's got live bacteria culture in it, so it's good for your gut bacteria. They've got a couple of different flavors. It's sort of like pemmican bars. It's got, like, you know, sort of semi-dried, semi-moist meat with some berries and some fruits and nuts, whatever. So it's really good.
What's pemmican?
Pemmican is a Native American food that's dried meat, dried venison usually, added with, like, fat, rendered fat.
Oh, okay.
So it's like 50-50 mix of, like, dried jerky and then, you know, fat.
What's jerky?
Yeah, whatever. So wellfoodco.com, click the banner in the right-hand margin, send them some love, buy some cookies.
Absolutely, and now it's time to jump right into our first news story about the EPA's ban on wood-burning stoves like they have a right.
Yeah, I want to say this might be a misconception. Your wife sent it to me, and I've heard this from people before where they've said the EPA bans wood-burning stoves, but it was actually sort of BS. So this news story comes from offgridnews.com. EPA's ban on wood-burning stoves just days from taking effect. The Environmental Protection Agency is set to finalize a set of regulations in February that critics say will effectively ban production of 80% of the wood stoves and pellet burning stoves in America. The EPA has published a set of proposed regulations more than a year ago and since then had accepted public comments. But the regulations already are having an impact. An advertisement for the Central Boiler Company says that the company's classic outdoor wood furnaces will be outlawed by new regulations and will not be available later this spring. The EPA has argued that the new regulations would improve air quality. The regulations require new stoves to burn 85% cleaner.
Residential wood smoke causes many countries in the U.S. to either exceed the EPA's health-based national ambient air quality standards for the particles or places them on the cusp of exceeding those standards, the EPA previously said, to the degree that older, higher-emitting, less efficient wood heaters are replaced by newer heaters that meet the requirements of this rule, or better, the emissions would be reduced, the efficiencies would be increased, and fewer health impacts should occur. It would be the first new standard on stoves since the 1980s. The most versatile... Okay. Critics say that it is a government overreach, lacking common sense, and note that people have heated their homes with wood for thousands of years. It seems that even the wood isn't green or renewable enough anymore, columnist Larry Bell wrote on Forbes.com. It's the oldest heating method known to mankind and the mainstay of rural homes in many of our nation's poorest residents. The agency's stringent one-size-fits-all rule
apply equally to heavily air-polluted cities and far, far cleaner plus typical colder off-grid wilderness areas such as the large regions of Alaska and the American West. About 12% of all the homes rely primarily on wood, Bell said, quoting census data. The regulations won't force Americans to get rid of their old stoves, but the regulations will ban the resale and the trading in those stoves.
The trading of those stoves. That's
trading. Yeah.
Local and state governments ban wood burning. Some local governments are going even further than the EPA. The Puget Sound Clean Air Agency recently banned wood burning in King County, Seattle. Fucking idiots. For several days because of stagnant weather conditions. The Seattle Times... Oh, let's just let people freeze to death. Fuck them. Fuck them motherfuckers. Seattle Times reported that persons who violate the ban can face a $1,000 fine. Obviously, these motherfuckers are poor and can't afford other means of heating, so they're burning wood, so they're going to be fined $1,000.
That they don't have.
Yeah, whatever. Elsewhere... The Utah Department of Environmental Quality has proposed a ban on wood-burning stoves between November 1st and March 15th for several counties around Salt Lake City.
Yep.
Thought Salt Lake City was smart in that. All coal and wood-burning would be illegal during the period in Salt Lake, Box Elder, Cache, Davis, Utah, Tooele, Utah, and Weber counties in the proposal. Only persons who use wood as their sole means of heating would be allowed to keep burning. The fuck? An organization called Utahns for Responsible Burning has been formed to fight the ban. The Desert News reported the news called the ban the nation's toughest wood burning ban. A full ban would punish those who have invested thousands of dollars upgrading their wood stoves to EPA compliant models that burn more cleanly. Bingham Young University Mechanical...
That's Brigham Young.
Whatever. Engineer Professor Ed Reed said of the ban. Yes.
Alrighty then. That's kind of along the lines of what I... So I've seen this story purported that wood-burning stoves would be illegal and banned and you'd have to throw them away and get rid of them. It looks like... Obviously not that I'm a fan of the government doing anything more than it's doing. But... It's being sort of reported wrongly in a lot of places where it's they're requiring people to produce better wood stoves that are more efficient, not just at burning, you know, the fuel leaving it, which most everyone knows, 80% of the heat of a wood burning stove just goes up the chimney and out in the air and away from you.
Mm-hmm.
So you know you're wasting energy. That's why I like rocket mass heaters because they're damn near like 90% efficient. So, you know, more efficient heaters are not just leaving cleaner emissions for CO2, whatever, but it's burning the heat more efficiently, so you're getting more heat out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that, at least. I mean, most all of the heaters you get on the market now are already compliant anyway.
Right.
Only things like the old, I mean, basically cast iron stoves are not really compliant. The idea that you can't trade them or sell them is ridiculous and bullshit. And what, I don't see any way the government's going to track it down. They're so low manpowered anyway. They're not going to be able to have like an entire like crime division devoted to busting wood stove burners.
Well, just follow the black smoke.
Yeah, I don't give a shit. It is ridiculous though, and it's just. More Orwellian laws that we don't need for dumb things we don't care.
If they do this, what the hell's next? Who the hell are they going to ban next time there's a fucking forest fire?
Yeah. Only you can prevent forest fires. You know what? I'm actually halfway to the point where I almost want to become like a Democrat and just vote ridiculous laws in just to speed up the downfall of the government.
You hearing this, Todd?
Like, I mean, I want to encourage everyone to get on food stamps to suck up all the money, and I want more and more laws so people get so pissed off we finally hit that snapping point and just overthrow the government.
I wish I could go ahead and get Social Security, you know, while it's still there.
Yeah, we'll never see that. Yeah, I mean, I started watching this History Channel show on the birth of the Revolution of the United States, and, we tolerate so much bullshit that our... Founding fathers would have been like, what?
You mean those same founding fathers who were tired of tolerating bullshit and decided to break off from the mother government and form their own new land?
Yes.
Yeah, those guys, they're all spinning in their graves
right now. Yous guys are awesome.
Yeah, yous guys were the ones that made this country great, and we's guys were the ones that fucked it completely.
Yeah, I want to have like a Nashville Pepsi party. Like, we'll just find a barge with like fucking Coke or Pepsi bringing it in for shipments and just like dip it over into the Cumberland River.
No, do Coke. I love Pepsi. I'm sorry.
Whatever. Yeah. Stupid. Two birds.
Okay, fine. We'll kill two birds with one stone. You dump the Coke, and you can also dump the Diet Pepsi.
Yeah.
Because I like Pepsi and you like Diet Coke. Or yeah, Coke Zero.
Coke Zero, yeah.
Whatever.
Well, I mean, we'll dump over Coke Zero, too. I don't give a shit.
I don't think they bring it in on barges, though.
I don't.
I mean, we'd have to drive the trucks into the Cumberland River.
Yeah. We'll just find a truck and just dump it over the side of the rail.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So, government, you're dumb. I hate you.
It happens. All right, now we're going to be talking about our next news story. Cheap gas could be a Trojan horse for the U.S. of A.
Really, the news story went away right when I got to it.
What the heck, dude?
It's been there for days because I was reading it for my personal... I wanted to.
What did you done did? There it is.
It's dumb.
You lost it.
So I was... as you know, Mike, gas prices have become fairly reasonable.
Fairly reasonable? I've seen them drop by a factor of like 50%.
Yes.
And I am loving every penny of it that I'm saving.
Which, so I sort of started looking up why gas prices are dropping and some other stuff. And
it's been my understanding over the last 3 years we've been using more domestic oil instead of foreign oil. At least that's what I heard on the radio one day.
There's a lot of factors I've come across. But one of the things is, oddly enough, like compared worldwide, we have some of the lowest gas taxes of anyone. Interesting. Whereas like, our gas taxes haven't went up in prices since, oh my God, it's been more than 20 years.
Well, shut up, don't jinx us.
Which is really weird, to the point where what the gas taxes have used for, like say fixing the roads, is now, it's so out of balance where like, we're having to borrow money we don't have to fix the roads because the taxes don't cover to fix the roads like the taxes are supposed to be, which is really weird. Places like, what is it, Germany? Germany's real high. The UK's real high. Like, their gas taxes are like, the UK's gas tax is $1.25.
You don't buy gas in England, you buy petrol.
Petrol's expensive. So this is one of the stories I happen to like on the gas problem. So, cheap gas could be a Trojan horse for America. What if the drop in oil prices currently making everyone cheer at the pumps is a Trojan horse? Subversion theories dictates that in order for an offensive move to be effective, it has to be welcomed. And who in America isn't psyched about cheap gas right now? Meanwhile, the U.S. government likely feels different. It was set to reap profits in its shale boom. That is, before the Saudi-led OPEC decided to flood the markets with its massive supply. To those ultimate benefit is the price drop. To whose ultimate benefit is the price drop? On its face, the only real benefactors appear to be global consumers. So why bother flooding the market? Despite the Saudi oil minister suggesting that his country wouldn't mind watching oil prices take an even greater plunge, Saudi Arabia is still making an income cut on its primary source of revenue at a time when it's projecting a $39 billion deficit for 2015. Why are the Saudis pretending to kick a rear? Why are the Saudis pretending that a kick in the rear is a massage?
Saudi interest in the petroleum high dive game could be strictly political, as Saudi Arabia has a long history of political funding. For example, we've already seen the Saudis supply the Syrian rebels with resources in their failed regime change efforts against Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, ultimately leading to the rise of the Islamic State terrorists currently wreaking havoc in Iraq and Syria. One theory is that the Saudi Arabia and the U.S. are conspiring to weaken the economies of Russia and Iran.
the motives would make enough sense with respect to Iran. Saudi, Sunni, and Iranian Shiite regimes have long hated each other. While America is perpetually concerned about Iranian nuclear unpredictability, on the Russian front, Saudis and Russians have been at each other's throats over Saudi funding of Islamic terrorism in Russia's North Caucasus region and over Russia's defense of Assad in the interest of maintaining Russian oil interests and of curtailing Islamic terrorism. Meanwhile, the U.S. currently seems intent on squeezing Russia economically. But as much sense as a U.S.-Saudi conspiracy theory might make, there are some significant problems with it. The U.S. chose Russia as a partner over Saudi Arabia and Qatar when faced with that choice in Syria last year. There are no shared ideological interests between the U.S. and Saudi Arabia, aside from the mutual cooperation in combating the Islamic State, which both countries had a role in creating. The Saudis couldn't possibly imagine to weaken the Russian economy to the point that Putin would abandon Assad and bail on Russia's associated economic interests in the region, nor would America want that at a time when Assad's forces are now fighting against a common Islamic State enemy. Moreover, Russian and Saudi ministers met in Moscow in November to discuss cooperating on oil to better manage their respective economic interests. The last fact alone flies in the face of any Saudi-U.S. oil price conspiracy theory.
And, arguably, more plausible theory is that any nation colluding with Saudi Arabia is China, the top global net importer of petroleum products and the country that's most benefiting what a bad journalist. From the bargain prices at the pump these days, China is also the only player that couldn't care less about oil revenues. Sitting in 49th place in the world for crude exports, China relies on manufacturing for its revenues. Unlike everyone else in this game, when China lays an oil pipeline in a foreign country, it's not for profit, it's just a massive straw delivering the milkshake to the insatiable masses back home. During the China Arab Corporation Forum in Beijing over the summer, Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi wrote that China and Arab states are working together to build the Economic Belt and Maritime Silk Road to revive the modern-day Silk Road. This will open a door to new opportunities for China-Arab relations. Saudi Arabia is already China's top oil supplier, and China doesn't care about its partners' ideological preferences. It's a match made in heaven. If the Saudis and Chinese are wheeling and dealing on oil prices for rewards to be specified later, then Russia, North America, and Europe will eventually all end up in sobbing in their alcoholic beverages of preference as their liquid gold drops in value.
And while we consumers may enjoy the price break now, government and industry oil revenue loss will come back to bite us in the form of job losses and fiscal cutbacks, requiring even more U.S. debt to be bought up by its primary holder, China. Enjoy the cheap gas, but let's just hope that it doesn't end up costing us far more than we could have ever imagined.
Yeah, I am enjoying the cheap gas. I filled up on the way here earlier for under $20.
Yeah, I saw the cardboard boxes in the back of your car just brimming.
Yeah, I agree with the article that it could be a conspiracy, it could be a play to sort of hurt America in the long run. But at the same time, as preppers, we need to take advantage of this. If you do gas storage, and I suggest you should, like I need to get another gas can to do some fuel storage myself. Absolutely. Now's a good time to be stockpiling.
Now, how long can a gas sit in a gas can and still be effectively usable?
That's an interesting question. Stephen Harris, who's a guru on all forms of energy, has done a lot of experiments, and he suggests definitely stabilizing your oil, your fuel, with a stabilizer. He doesn't so much like the Stabil. He likes another brand whose name I can't remember. I'll try to look it up and put it in the show notes for you. I've listened to a long interview where he talked all about storing gasoline. Mm-hmm. His preferred methods. He likes using these 15-gallon, have you seen those big blue drums that people put water in?
Yeah, I've seen those.
They have 15-gallon little ones for that. And he likes to store his fuel in that because They're pretty much indestructible.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't vent. Unlike, you know, the gas cans you can get from the store now, they're built to vent. They off-gas. You can smell them. These things, you seal them up tight, they're sealed. Mm-hmm. Nothing gets out. Nothing goes wrong with them. They can withstand anything. They're better. They're usually pretty cheap. They last forever.
Now, why are the common gas cans built to vent like that?
Because California is a hippie state of hippies.
Aren't they worried about fumes?
Something like that. It's supposed to be safety. It's supposed to keep them from building up pressure inside and exploding and doing something retarded.
Well, I mean, if it's kept in a safe, you know, area of moderate temperature or whatever, I don't see why pressure would build up in it.
I don't know. I know that the Californians are stupid, and they're the reason that we have. Because manufacturers can't manufacture, you know, a gas can for California and then a gas can for the entire rest of the country. They have to switch their manufacturer and we'll just make one gas can.
No, but this is definitely the time to start stocking up on gas. Yes, just it is. Like you said.
But back to the point.
It's like when you're playing stocks, buy low.
Yeah, he's stored gas without treatment for 2 years and it still worked fine.
Excellent.
So if you rotate it, you'll be fine. If you put any sort of stabilizer in it, you'll be fine. I'd stock up and just have some. A couple mm-hmm. gallons here and there.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
And even if you just have the gas cans, take those gas cans, take your cardboard boxes, take your 15-gallon drums, take all of that stuff.
I mean, what I like is if you have gas storage, when you go to fill up, just pour your gas from your stored gas can into your car, then go fill up your car the rest of the way, and then refill your empty can. And that way you're always using it and keep it going and you know,
yeah, refreshing it. Now, one tip I would give, if you're going to be storing gas long-term, especially in several containers, just, you know, take a black magic marker right on the side of the container, the date you put it in. That way you know exactly how long it's been sitting there, and you can use up that gas before it goes bad.
Yeah. One of the best ideas I ever heard was to get 12, like, 2-gallon gas cans
mm-hmm.
and write January through December on them.
Okay.
And then every month, use that can. Like, it's time to fill up, you dump in your can in your car, you go refill it, you put it back in the January stack. February, do the same thing. And that way you have a 12-month supply, you have 12 gallons of gas, which is a pretty decent supply of gas.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, you have 24 gallons of gas.
Yeah, for 2-gallon gas cans.
Yeah. You have 24 gallons of gas, which is a pretty good storage. And you know your oldest gas is only a year old.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good idea. For people that have less storage, you know, you can do 6 cans, you can do 3 cans, whatever. it could suck in the future, but while it's not sucking, I'd take advantage of it. We haven't seen gas under $2 since 2009.
I am seeing the drop in gas prices slowing down a little bit.
Yeah,
I'm afraid it's plateauing.
Probably. Probably the cheapest one I saw was my friend Marcus got gas for $1.29.
And that is still psychotic.
I can't even imagine that. I got it earlier for $1.97.
I have not seen gas like that in over a decade.
Yeah, I know.
It's just crazy. Alrighty, now it's time for our main topic of the day, an intro to Paleo Noobs.
Yeah, I got a message earlier from a guy, and I think he mentioned it on the Lost Skills podcast. Our buddy Jeff Radke was thinking about paleo, and the listener, he was thinking about paleo. And there's just a disconnect of how do I get started? How do I jump in? It depends on the level that you really want to get into it.
Mm-hmm.
I nerd out on the nutrition and stuff, so I dig into a lot of the science. I dig into this. You don't have to.
Well, you're an all-or-nothing kind of guy.
Yeah. I mean, paleo became my obsession, like Kevin Smith and Doctor Who and whatnot. So your obsessions. I mean, you don't have to. You don't have to get into the knowledge. If you just, like, a lot of people just want to know, James, what do I do? How the fuck do I get started? What do I eat? What do I do?
And for those out there, I would like to recommend going to the survivalpunk.com website and looking up this great article written by James over here called Can I Eat This?
Oh, I might put a link in that. Yeah, Can I Eat This? Which was...
Yeah, definitely link back to that.
Kind of a rant and then kind of a good thing. Oh, I did get a comment on...
It made me roll a tear at the end, dude.
I did get some comments that people want you to go back to paleo.
So, how many?
A couple.
A couple? Is that 20?
No.
Well, then, you know. Well, try harder, fuckers.
Whatever. People want you to... People.
I said I wanted 20 people telling me...
Yeah.
...that they want me back on paleo.
We never get that many comments on an episode.
Well, until I get 20 people telling me that...
You'll keep poisoning yourself.
I'm not poisoning myself. I'm filling myself with yummy, happy tummy...
Fatty, fuel. Fatty. Anyway, if you do want to make the plunge for paleo, I got a couple tips to share with you. To start you along the path, maybe one day in the future we'll do like a... A paleo, like 202, like advanced placement paleo information for like the second tier, like autoimmune protocol, gut bacteria health, you know. But for Jeff Radke, for you guys that want to get on paleo, I could give you the beginning tips, the start tips. Mike did paleo, so he can answer a couple questions from his sort of noob perspective. I mean, the basic rules of paleo. You want to know what to do. No beans, no legumes. So,
and a legume is pretty much anything that grows naturally in a pod.
Right. So no beans, no peanuts, no green beans are kind of iffy. For the first 30 days, I'd say don't eat green beans. But after that, there's really not a whole lot of science behind a green bean still being bad for you. You want to eat green beans, that's fine.
I love green beans.
So. I hate them. I was I don't so eat glad anyway. That was
back in.
Peas. It's not peas. Soy, definitely no soy, which is bad for you in a whole ton of reasons.
okay.
No grains. Grains consist of wheat, barley, millet, amaranth is a grain. Acorns are a grain.
Cut out all breads. Cut out beer especially. I mean, that comes from barley.
Yes. Next. Corn. Corn is a grain, actually. Rice is a grain.
Mm-hmm.
So no corn, no rice, which also a lot of things that have those ingredients in it. So see, the main rules are no grains. We've covered basically what the grains are. If you need a higher list, you can look that up. No legumes and no dairy. First 30 days, I suggest you follow these three rules strict. You can do anything for 30 days. Literally, you could go on a pure Coke and hooker diet for 30 days, and you would live. You may be really trashed in 30 days. You know, Coke and hookers 24 hours a day, 30 days. You might need to detox after that. But you would live. The body, the human body is pretty damn resilient.
Detox? You would need full-on fucking rehab after 30 days of Coke and hookers.
Yeah. I don't know. I think you'd snap back. So you can do anything for 30 days. The first 30 days, follow the strict paleo rules. After that, I can't find a whole lot of reasons, and I myself don't. I can't find a whole lot of reasons to not include full fat dairy, heavy cream, full fat cheeses. Don't go no low fat bullshit.
Butter,
grass fed butter.
And by butter, I don't mean margarine.
Yes, no vegetable spread.
Yeah.
Cut your crocker, get the fuck out.
No, you want to go butter. I mean, you want, okay, when you pick up the butter, if you're not sure about it, just read the ingredients. If they include anything other than basically cream.
And salt,
it's not the butter for you.
Yes. If it says canola oil. Oh my God, Kerrygold has a butter canola oil mixture, and I just want to snap out and kill them.
What the hell is Kerrygold thinking? Oh my God, dude, they've betrayed you.
It's not the normal butter, but it's a separate thing. It's like, I guess it's for smoothness or something.
Is
I don't
it
know.
Cheaper?
I didn't look. It's one of the ones that come in a tub. Like, they have the softer version that comes in a tub, but then they also have this canola oil mixture.
Oh my God.
I don't want any part of canola.
That's so stupid.
Yeah, no,
you don't, you want to stay away from it. If a freaking ingredient includes oil, especially canola oil, no. Stay the hell away from it.
Yeah.
Now, I want to get, and I'd like to actually share some stuff with our listeners here, too. Now, those okay. first 30 days, especially for a lot of you, especially for those out there who are like me, and I consider myself obese.
Yes.
I was a lot more obese before I started this, and I managed to throw off 35 pounds right. relatively quickly. Those first 30 days for a lot of you are going to be rough. you wouldn't believe the kind of changes in your mood that will happen when you start changing your diet completely like that. People don't think about how much the various things that you put into your body are actually going to affect your physical and mental state of being.
Lots of ways, yeah.
I literally found myself getting, I mean, on this diet, I'm losing weight. I'm seeing the results that I'm wanting to see. And I'm staying in constant periods between anger to the point of wanting to punch a hole through drywall, to sadness to the point of literally sobbing in a drive-thru line when I'm ordering food for other people. I mean, if you actually look it up, and I did this, dropping dairy from your diet, especially stuff like cheese, that has similar effects on your brain as if you were just kicking a morphine addiction. Dairy and cheese affect your brain the same way. They stimulate the same parts of your brain as morphine. And morphine is very addictive.
Mm-hmm.
Now, by the same rationale, cheese and dairy and stuff like that will have those same addictive qualities, and they will affect your mood. You will be sad. I mean, I was sad to the point of wanting to quit but refusing to quit because I was seeing the results. You got to look at the long run on this. If you're seeing those results, just keep that in mind. The hard thing for me, I was trying to go full paleo in a house that had three other people living in it that were not going full paleo. God bless my wife. She was eating all the same paleo dinners as me. That was making it really great. My kids, on the other hand, were not. My son's one of the pickiest eaters I've ever met in my life. And trying to get him to change his entire diet, I might as well just ask him to completely stop eating, because it's just easier to just give him the food that he's used to eating. So having frozen pizzas in the house, that was freaking killing me.
I actually want to have there's a lot of paleo parents out there. I want to get one of them on the show and have them talk about some techniques to, because I've listened to them talk before about getting their kids to eat paleo, and they have some unique takes on it.
Start by adding bacon into everything. That's what I say. My kids love bacon.
Yeah.
I mean, oh God. Not my daughter would eat a whole package of bacon by herself if you love her. I mean, I would right now, too. I mean,
right.
Crispy bacon, God, I love it. But, I mean, you're going to be fighting those. You're going to be fighting these mood swings, but after a while, they do start stabilizing out. Just stick to those 30 days. Trust me, it'll be worth it at the end. And plus, after that point, you could start gradually adding a few things back in. I mean, you don't want to go whole hog back to your old diet. That's just going to ruin all your progress.
No, I don't see a problem adding back in full-fat dairy, which is what I talked about. Don't want to add back in breads and stuff, because then you're not on paleo at that point.
No, you're not. But I had to add cheese back in really, really quick. I mean, soon as those 30 days were up, I mean, I just wanted to go out and buy like a block of Velveeta or any freaking thing.
Yeah.
I mean, cheese makes me happy.
Yeah.
It really does.
You have severe food addiction. Well, you have a lot of food addictions. I would say I've not noticed the depression to be common. I'd say it happens. You have maybe stronger food addictions than some people. You associate food with happiness maybe more. And then cheese specifically, definitely a big cheese addiction.
Well, it's like I was telling you last night about Sbarro's pizza. I associate that with very fond memories from my childhood.
Yeah, which
some of the happiest times I ever had were going to the mall with my dad. He'd take me to the arcade, and then we'd go get some Sbarro's.
Right.
And which is probably why I'm such a video game and Sbarro's junkie anymore.
Yeah. So, I've never had any of the depressions with food, really. Even giving up alcohol altogether, I haven't had depressions over giving that up.
You surprised me at how well you took to being on the wagon. Honestly, and dude, I know I haven't said this in the last few few episodes, but how long have you been sober now?
16 months, a couple weeks ago. Obviously, I'm still going. Obviously, I'm still 16 weeks. I'm still sober.
I am so proud of you for
months.
That, dude.
Did I say weeks? No, I meant months. 16
months. Well, 16 months, and I am still extremely proud of you. Because honestly, the way you were going before you got sober, I mean, I honestly thought you would never live to be an old man.
Yeah.
I thought you would end up, like, wrapping your car around something or killing somebody.
Right. Yeah, so I mean, I guess I handle quitting a bit better. Well, I mean, at first I replaced it with CrossFit, which, I mean, really, after CrossFit, you feel like you have a hangover. Your body's sore, you can't think, and...
I mean, you took to being sober like you took to drinking, which means you're really, really fucking sober.
I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, you're high on life these days.
Wow. I still think like an alcoholic, but, you know, craziness, whatever. The food addictions, like we said, first 30 days, do strict paleo. After that, you can sort of add back in things like, you know, once a month if you go eat Mexican, you want to have a few tortilla chips. Probably not going to destroy the world. I do like the idea of cheat days. You could do it once a week. You could do it once a month, which is what I usually do.
But you got to watch out for the cheat days, too. You got to watch out for your cheat day list. I mean, one common piece of advice that people give... Every time you get a craving for something, write it down.
Yeah.
Save it for your cheat day. Which, by the time I got to my cheat day, I had a list that had like 37 things on it.
Yeah, and to be honest, I kind of like the idea that if you have 37 things on your list, you should eat all 37 things. You should like dive into debauchery of like excess of food, because you will feel like shit. And you will think, God, it's like a hangover. You're like, oh, I'm never drinking again.
Honestly, that's the way it felt after my cheat day. Yeah. I felt like crap all day. I felt sluggish and low energy.
Which is a reason why you want to do the cheat day, like, full-on debauchery. Because then you're like, it turns you off of it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're like, you don't want to do it.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people will, after a while, just give up the cheat day altogether. Either that or just start going really mild on it.
Yeah, which I think is sort of hurtful. I think you should always have cheat day, full-on debauchery, so you do have that. You get it out of your system, and then you do have, like, the food hangover, and you're sick, and you're like, oh, I don't want to do that ever again. But you force yourself to do it. So it keeps it sort of healthy. And there's some real, like, hormonal reasons to do cheat day, where it keeps weight loss going because you're spiking caloric needs, and you're sort of doing, like, a body reset. So... There's real legitimate reasons to keep cheat day.
Now, another great tip I can give, and you can attest to this for people out there just starting out on paleo, don't get too complicated with your recipes and stuff.
Well, I was going to cover this. Yeah, keep it simple. I mean, you get into paleo and you start trying to do like the food replacement. You're like, oh, what can I do that's like French fries? What can I do that's like pasta?
What can I do that's like tacos?
You go down this road, and every once in a while it's kind of neat. You know, like, I know a lot of people are on the holy grail of like the greatest paleo bread recipe. And my friend, Jeff Nimoy, over at, oh God, I want to get his website right, cookingcaveman.com, has my preferred recipe for paleo bread. Which instead of using any baking and stuff, it is baking. But instead of using any powder, he uses almond butter.
I'm sorry, dude. You said paleo bread and just reminded me that time years ago you tried to make bread out of ground-up pork skins.
Yes, that was terrible. Jeff's recipe for paleo bread is really delicious. But even that, you know, I've had that recipe for a couple years. I've made it, like, twice, maybe.
Really? I mean, how does it compare to, like, just a loaf of normal bread?
You know what? I'm going to bring him here and make it one night.
Oh, please do.
It's only, like, four ingredients.
Really?
Yeah.
What are those four ingredients?
Like,
do we know?
Almond butter, eggs, baking soda.
Baking soda's paleo?
Ish.
Paleo-ish?
Yeah. It's definitely not bad or harmful, but it's not really exactly paleo-paleo. So it's like olive oil. Olive oil technically is not paleo, but it's healthy, so it's okay. Which makes it paleo. And I think the last ingredient is apple cider vinegar, maybe.
Some of the rules are paleo or a little.
Yeah, so yeah, you bake it and it's delicious and it rises and it's sort of fluffy and not super dense and it's good. I've made sandwiches. I made a Reuben out of paleo bread. Oh my God, I love Reubens.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to have to try that.
So yeah, don't go out either way trying to replicate these things. One, it takes a lot of time. It costs a lot of money. It knocks your bill up. And there's always that sort of, you know, like when I had my freaking rutabaga French fry experiment. It never is going to taste like a French fry. French fries are magical, and they're delicious, and they're bad for you, and sometimes you just need some French fries, but you're not going to make French fries.
No.
It's just not going to happen. There's some other good foods you can make that are tasty.
The only thing you can replace a potato with is another potato. I'm sorry.
Sweet potato fries are pretty delicious, but yeah, they're not exactly the same.
They're not as many carbs, but they're still kind of high carb, especially for that first month.
Yeah, the process you do... Well, that's not a point to talk about in a second. So yeah, I like simple meals. They don't take a lot of time. They don't take a lot of energy. They're delicious. They're paleo. I mean, the basis for like 90% of my recipes... You take a protein.
Steak, pork chops, pork steak, bacon.
Turkey, fish, whatever. Brown it in a skillet. Put in veggies. Kale, broccoli, cauliflower, zucchini, squash. Name random vegetable that's paleo approved.
Brussels sprouts,
oh my God. You know, cook it in it. Add seasonings. Oh my God, what do you feel like doing? You're in a Mexican mood? Salt, pepper, garlic, onion, cumin, a little chili pepper.
You'd be amazed how you can how you can change a dish totally with just the right seasoning.
Yeah.
You can go from Mexican, to Indian, to Asian.
Yeah. You know, and have some like pantry staples. You know, you brown your meat, you put in Brussels, you put in broccoli, add your seasonings, put a little marinara sauce over it. You got sort of a spaghetti flavor going. It's real good. You know, I did that the other day. Actually, I did that recipe. I took it to work with me. Ground beef, broccoli, and spaghetti sauce. Tasty. Quick. You know, and these meals take so little time. I mean, if you use frozen veggies, you know, you brown your meat, you put in your veggies, you add your seasoning, you put a lid on it, you let it cook for a couple minutes till your broccoli or your vegetables are tender, you spoon it out. The work is so small, the time is so, you know, these are like 30-minute meals, but you're not standing there the entire 30 minutes.
No, not at all.
You know, you do a little work, you walk off, you do a little work, you come back, your dog is freaking out in there.
Yeah, I know. What the hell is going on?
She wants me.
She wants you?
Yes. Come on, Dixie.
That was just Dixie, right?
Yes.
Okay, a good time. You still.
She wants me. I'll run her to the bed.
Come on,
dog.
Dixie.
So simple meals. Quick and easy. You can do some more elaborate meals. I think I've talked in the past about one of my favorite chicken recipes, and really cheap and really paleo, is from Nom Nom Paleo's Kraken Chicken. So you take a bone-in chicken thigh. Get your scissors. You can cut the bone out, making it now boneless, but you saved a bunch of money by buying it bone-in.
Mm-hmm.
And now you have the bone you can make chicken stock with later on.
Absolutely. Right off the bat, that's like two things right there.
Yeah. So, season, okay, well, first of all, you pound your chicken. So, you put it, like, between, like, some plastic wrap, and then you pound it in the back of a skillet or a hammer,
mm-hmm.
a mallet, a kitchen mallet, not a hammer, because that won't work. You pound it sort of thin, you know, spray out a little bit, get your skillet really hot, put down some oil in it, and then cook it for, like, a ridiculous amount of time, skin down first.
Mm-hmm.
Like, 3, 4, 5 minutes, something like that. What you're trying to do is get that skin super crispy. Crispy chicken skin, so delicious. It snap, crackles, good flavor. It's like a pork skin, only chicken skin. Flip it over, cook it on the other side for a couple minutes, get it, you know, cooked all the way through, nice and good. And then when you serve it, you've got that crisp when you crunch through, you know, on the outside.
You know, and your brain actually craves that crispness, that char that's
yeah.
on there.
Yeah, it's so good. This is one of my favorite recipes. It doesn't make leftovers that well, though. Because the crisp kind of, like, if you put it in your refrigerator or travel with it, like, I've discovered that this Kraken chicken, you want to eat, like, after you cook it. Like, you cook it, sit down and eat it right then. Don't play around. Don't transport. I tried to bring some out here one time, and it just became sort of soft and soggy-ish. It was still good, but it wasn't. When it's fresh out of the skillet, it's amazing. So just simple and easy. No, nothing. Don't go complicated. Don't go expensive. You can occasionally as a treat.
I wouldn't start even trying to do like the substitutions. Oh, I used to love this. How can I make it paleo? I wouldn't even attempt to start that until after the first month. I made that mistake
yeah.
by trying to do that, and I just made my life a hell of a lot more complicated than it had to be.
Right. So
I mean, your life's already going to be complicated as hell, knowing that you got to lay the Twinkies down.
Yeah, I mean, make a couple. This is the thing, people tend to eat the same things over and over and over. So just find a recipe that you like: ground beef, broccoli, and spaghetti sauce. Make that for, you know, lunch every day. For dinner, you know, things sort of varied up. Breakfast. I eat the same thing for breakfast pretty much 99% of the time. 3 pieces of bacon, 3 eggs.
Yeah, how can you go wrong with bacon and eggs? I mean,
sometimes I'll dice up some kale and put that. So I sort of do a kale scrambled egg mixture.
Interesting.
It's good. You know, you have all that bacon fat left in the pan, so you sort of braise your kale and your bacon fat, and then you put your cracked eggs in, you scramble it up. I actually got my stepdad hooked on kale that way. He'd never had it before.
Really?
You know, everyone's had kale, but they don't eat it. It's a garnish on, like, a salad plate or something. People see it, and they're like, whatever, and throw it aside. No one ever eats the kale. Kale's really good, though, especially, like much everything else, when you saute it in bacon fat.
Whatever happened to parsley? I remember parsley used to be a garnish on everything back in the 80s.
It's gone out of favor to be replaced by kale now.
Hmm.
Our kids, your kids, will be eating parsley. They're like, oh, let's go to this thing called parsley, Dad. It's awesome.
Yeah, I nobody ever ate the parsley. They just ate around it.
Yeah. So there we go. No grains, no dairy, no legumes. Keep it simple. Another thing I want to cover. People tend to get caught up on, like, macronutrient ratios on paleo. That's not a built-in part of the paleo diet. The paleo diet, we just covered, no grains, no dairy, no legumes. That's it. Those 3 rules. You also want to kind of avoid processed foods a little bit, but if it's convenient, it works out. You know, Spam, I've made a good case that Spam is perfectly fine. There's nothing in paleo that says you must eat low carb. I like low carb for a lot of reasons. If you're an active, fit person, healthy, or you're just not looking to lose weight, there's no reason you can't eat fairly high carb paleo. It's hard, like with grains and a lot of starchy high carb food that is not paleo, it's easy to rack up a ridiculous number of carbs. You know, like eating a standard, you know, American diet, you could easily hit 1,000 carbs a day or so.
Mm-hmm.
Which is just, it's just hard to eat that much paleo food that's I mean, that many carbs in paleo food. I mean, you'd be sick from eating too much.
I mean, that, and, you know, talk about quantity of eating. That's one of the beautiful things about that paleo diet, especially in the first 30 days. If you're hungry, just eat more. I mean, good God.
Always. Just keep eating. I mean,
you can eat as much paleo-friendly food as you want and still lose the weight.
Yeah.
Because that was one of the mistakes I was making. I mean,
you were under-eating it. I kept yelling at you about it.
I mean, to the point where I was feeling sick and could hardly stand up on a couple of days.
You're like, I don't understand. And I was like, well, what'd you eat? I'm like, oh, I ate this. I'm like, you're an idiot. Like, you tell me what you ate for the whole day. And I'm like, I can eat that as a snack.
Yeah. Well, because I didn't know what I was doing.
So, yeah. Carbs don't matter.
Quantity really doesn't matter.
Quantity doesn't matter. Yeah. I mean, that's you eat until you're full. And as you get more used to paleo, your leptin sensors will reset, and you'll know when you're full more readily. Because bread and gluten kind of tricks your brain. You're full, and then it sends signals saying, nope, not full. Keep eating, bro.
Mm-hmm. And that's how you get fat.
Yeah, when you start eating paleo, your body will start to change, and you'll know when you're full. You'll eat a little bit less by just not. You'll know when you're full, so you won't eat as much. Protein and fat, which is to be the basis of your diet, tend to be pretty satiating.
Mm-hmm.
So you won't be hungry. And then once you really dial in, you won't have like those like blood sugar crashes, and you won't have, like, the 2 o'clock, like, shakes. Like, I need to eat or I'm going to murder your face. Ah! You know, you'll be, you know, some days I'll eat breakfast and then, like, I'll just run around and I'll be like, oh, it's, like, 4 o'clock. I should probably eat again. I can go for a food.
Yeah. Now, and a lot of you are probably out there going to want to consult your doctors about, you know, the diet change. I always say to But just remember our...
The doctor's probably a moron. He's going to say, don't do this.
Yeah, just remember our interview that we had with DB, the Florida Hillbilly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Remember, he got on the paleo diet, lost all this weight. And this was after the doctor had given him completely different advice.
Right.
That wasn't working for him. Gets on the paleo diet, goes back to that doctor, a year later? And the doctor's like, I'm glad to see you taking my advice. He's like, actually, I didn't. He's like, well, what did you do? I went on the paleo diet. Well, what's a paleo diet? And he tells him, he's like, that doesn't work. After the results were obviously sitting right in front of him.
Yeah. Some doctors are starting to see the light, but there's still a lot of old school doctors. Like you know, when you go through medical school for like, 5-10 years or whatever, there's like a 3-week class on nutrition. Yeah, that is retarded.
3 weeks out of...
Years.
Out of minimum, like, 8 years.
Yeah.
Of schooling.
It's like, oh, you want to eat lots of grains. Grains are good for you. And don't eat fat. Fat will make you fat. Which is a good segue into our next article, because we're running long, as always. So, yeah, I think we summed it up for you. If you have any more detailed questions, you could write me, jamesrobpunk.com, and I'll try to answer it. But I think that's enough to get you started. Keep it simple. Don't eat grains. Don't eat legumes.
Alrighty, now, what are we doing next on the show?
It is Gadget Punk. I mean, it's right there. Follow the board.
I know, but we're running long. I didn't know if you wanted to cut anything out, you jackass.
Fuck it. We're gonna keep going.
Alright, fine then. It's time for Gadget Punk.
Alright, yeah. So, I had an email recently, it was a comment on an old article I did on the top 10 paleo foods to store, which is, I mean, by far one of my most popular articles I've ever written, my claim to fame, if you will, and one of the top paleo items that I thought was good for food storage was biltong, which is a traditional South African meat that's sort of dry pickling. So they put all these spices on it, you know, vinegar and salt and coriander and black pepper, and they just hang it up on trees in the bush in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting fact, the black pepper is a fly repellent, so flies won't land on it and lay their eggs in it.
Huh.
Which is why they put black pepper on it. Bam, well, right there.
Capsaicin, the active ingredient in most peppers, I mean, it's there to keep insects from eating.
Yeah.
Which is also what makes it spicy as hell.
Yep, so they hang it up, and it's not like dehydrated jerky at all. When normally,
it's still moist.
Normally, when I make biltong, I make like thick chunks of meat. It's like, oh, it's huge, it's good. So the inside's sort of like mummified and shriveled up, and the inside's still sort of tender, like a medium rare steak.
Mm-hmm.
So good. It's still pink too. You can still see the pink because you know you use like good beef meat and stuff. So I had a comment on this from a girl, Nicole, that works at this Braytime Biltong company.
That's spelled Braitime.
Right. And I've not seen any, and I did research on this article, I couldn't find any companies making biltong in the U.S. USDA standards, blah, 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 can't import from South Africa, illegal meat standards, whatever. So I couldn't find anyone to recommend going to and buying your biltong from, so I just had to recommend you make it, which I did before. You just cure your meat and hang it up in your bedroom to sit for a week, and then you eat it. And one of the aspects of biltong is, because mummified, it pretty much lasts for eternity.
You had to call it mummified.
Mummified, yes. I think I still have some biltong I made like 10 years ago. You want some?
No.
That's
just horrible.
So, Nicole from Braytime left a comment on that, talking about her company making biltong. I read this email, or this comment on the website, and I immediately emailed her and was like, would you be willing to send me samples of your biltong for review on air, on the blog?
Well, would they?
She had them sent out so fast, I didn't even realize it. It was like, she said, yep, and then like 2 days later, I had this giant package of meat in my mailbox.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome times.
Also in handy resealable packs.
Yeah, not that we'll need that. So I brought it over here tonight to do a sort of preliminary review. We had two kinds tonight. We had the we had a dried beef sausage,
Which was excellent, by the
which
way.
Which was excellent. The it's sort of like if you dehydrated a sausage link.
Yeah, essentially.
Yeah.
Now, aesthetically, it wasn't too pleasing.
It looked bad, but I'm used to. I mean, obviously, I can find a picture of the biltong I made at home. There's no way you would vape that.
No.
Because you're such a picky weirdo. The texture, though, was better. You'd like the texture.
Quit calling me a weirdo in front of our listeners.
Yeah. So I really liked the sausage. Like it had clove and coriander, which is a great flavor combination.
Oh yeah, no, the flavor on it was spectacular. Yeah.
And then we tried a package of the biltong, which is sliced thin, sort of like jerky,
but
it's still really moist, and it was a peri peri flavor, which I'm not sure what it is, but it's spicy as all hell.
Oh god, yeah, it was like mouth water. I mean, it was like mouth sizzling spicy.
Yeah, and it's sort of like melt in your mouth, just juicy and moist, and not like. Not tough like beef jerky is. Not like you're not ripped. Like, I sometimes eat beef jerky, and my jaw starts to cramp because it's so much chewing and work. This was like, just like, oh, just put it in your mouth, and it melts, and it was so delicious. You didn't care for it, the biltong. You loved the sausage.
Though. Oh, I love the sausage. I got to eat, like, another two bags of those damn things.
Yeah, which, I mean, I still have a whole lot of packages. I'm trying to save some for blog review.
Don't get me wrong. It was not the flavor of the biltong. It just... I'm a texture weirdo, as you would fucking put it.
Yeah.
I have a problem with certain textures. I mean, the consistency of certain foods, it causes a gag reflex on me. But, I mean, if it wasn't for that, I would have devoured it. My wife devoured it.
It was good.
Yeah, she had to pass you the plate back before she ate it all.
Yeah. I really liked it. I want to try some other flavors. I mean, obviously, I have a lot more flavors.
Mm-hmm.
The sausages were super good. I got two flavors of those. Yeah. Was there a peri-peri sausage?
Yeah, it was peri-peri sausage. That's the one we didn't try.
Yeah. Such good. Yeah. So, I highly recommend it. Links will be in the show notes to find them and check them out. I still stand by, biltong needs to be in your storage. And if you were a little iffy about slicing up chunks of red meat and hanging it up on a string in your room for a week to dehydrate or to just dry pickle in the air to mummify, maybe food safe packages is the way you need to go.
I wish you'd quit saying mummify.
Yes. I
that's as bad as when people keep talking about eating the carcass.
The carcass. Yeah. So yeah, check them out. Break time. Links will be in the show notes. Good flavors.
Absolutely. Now, coming up, we've got our Nutrition Punk segment, which is the Eat Fat Diet That Will Make You Thin.
Go figure. I saw this news article on Facebook shared from our good show friend, Jimmy Moore.
I figured it had to be from Jimmy Moore.
Yeah. Well, you know, when I look through news feed on Facebook, I change it to just look for Facebook pages. And normally I just see from the Girls for Gunslingers page, lots of half-naked women. Good page, guys.
Yeah, most of your page is filled full of butts and redheads.
What can I say? That's what I like.
But are they paleo?
Yeah. So this one comes from Jimmy Moore, so let's just dive right in. The Eat Fat Diet That Will Make You Thin. Want to know the secret to being svelte? Well, according to Irish Woman, I'm already in love with you, Zana Morris, it's about embracing fat at every opportunity. Deirdre Reynolds investigates. Eat fat, get thin. That's the idea behind a revolutionary new diet. Mentally, I put quotations around that. Mentally, new. Created by an Irish woman that is now taking the health world by storm this January. I'm a little weird about this. Co-written by Luth woman Zana Morris, the high-fat diet, How to Lose 10 Pounds in 14 Days, hit shelves around the world just a week ago today. But Zana has already been flooded with tweets from people who've lost up to 14 pounds on the high-fat, low-protein plan.
High-fat, low-protein?
That'll work, too. High-fat, moderate, high-fat, low. Yeah. So the higher you get your fat ratio, the quicker you should lose weight. It's been a whirlwind, says Zana, who's from Dundalk, but lives in London.
So it's Dundalk.
Look, don't talk over me. I didn't correct you when you messed up. Don't correct me.
I didn't mess up.
You did. But lives in London.
We're expecting about a 10-pound weight loss if you follow the plan, but actually we're getting people to lose a lot more. I've been getting tweets constantly for the last few days saying I've lost 11 pounds or I've lost 14 pounds. The results have been astonishing, which is a testament to people who are actually doing it properly because that was always my biggest concern.
Zana, who runs the library gym in London's Notting Hill, first stumbled upon the idea of eating fat in a bid to lose weight almost 20 years ago and has been using it to maintain her figure ever since.
I thought it was new.
You thought what was new?
She said it was a new diet.
Were you saying, oh yeah, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Initially, I went the vegetarian low-fat direction in life, says the personal trainer and nutritionist. So when I discovered the high-fat plan in my early 20s, it stunned me, not just from the fat loss side of it, but also the way it stopped cravings. With every other diet I'd been on, you needed willpower, whereas with this, you didn't need you didn't have cravings. Your energy was really good and you felt full, which is sort of why I fell in love with it. Following on from the low-carb Atkins diet, the latest high-fat one depends on carefully calculated portions of fat and proteins at each meal to force the body to burn its own blubber. By sticking to the book's 4-day pre-tox and 10-day blitz, Zana reveals how the fat should melt off. Once you're on the plan properly, quite literally, the more fat you eat, the more your metabolism flares up, and the more fat you burn. It's like pouring oil onto a naked flame. Basically, it is a high-fat, low-medium protein plan that's very low in carbohydrates, so red meat, fish, eggs, cheese, and butter are all on it. It's not a million miles away from Atkins or Paleo. The trouble with Atkins is very simply that the creator, Robert Atkins, never quantified how much protein versus fat to eat, and if you go too high on protein side of it, in my experience, you just do not get the same results.
Actually, he did. People just never read that chapter. I mean, it's been the original book where he had a measurement for how much protein you should be consuming, which is sort of on the low to moderate side. It's kind of weird. People.
I always loved the old rumor that he died morbidly obese.
Oh, my God, yeah. No, he did not. He was healthy. He didn't have any. It wasn't like a heart attack. He didn't have heart failure, but that was after, like, he slipped on ice in New York and fell down and, like, hit his head or something. And he had complications in the hospital because our medical system's Our medical system's rubbish. The high-fat diet works on two levels. The first is stabilizing insulin. And look, they spelled it the British way.
Oh, they did.
Says Zana, who wrote the high-fat diet with award-winning British health journalist Helen Foster. Any fat around the middle tends to be related to the body releasing a little too much insulin. Stabilize that, and the fat drops away from the middle very fast. Fat is the only food group that doesn't cause that insulin spike. Secondly, the body normally burns sugar as a fuel. On this plan, you're not getting the sugar, so it has to switch to burning fat. Once it does that, it can drive into your own fat stores really quickly. In a world of low-fat this and low-fat that, however, Zana admits that putting the fat back into the fat fighting hasn't been easy. In the early days, honestly, people were quite horrified when I suggested putting them on a high-fat. She confesses the meaty plan, which can be adopted for vegetarians but isn't suitable for vegans. That's true. And you had to hand-hold them through the first 2 or 3 days. Like a lot of people, I grew up on a low-fat everything. Fat was my number one enemy, and you avoid it like the plague.
If you think about it logically, it doesn't make any sense to eliminate any major food group completely. In evolutionary terms, you wouldn't have got past go if you didn't eat fat. As far back as the 1950s, Middlesex University did a study showing the very high fat worked faster than fasting for fat loss, says Zana. That message just slightly got squashed in the late 1970s. Nowadays, more and more research is being done on this because people are realizing that there's truth in it. I certainly think the low-fat direction hasn't worked. From my experience with clients, cutting fats out causes people to eat more rather than less. Although butter, double cream, and steak are allowed in the fat-tastic plan, even a stick of sugar-free gum can derail it, warns Zana.
When we talk about high fat as a diet, you do have to watch that people aren't just adding fat into everything else. It's a high fat plan, but it's also a low carb plan. It's not just eat fat and off you go. Oh God. Yeah, don't put butter on your cake or something. idiots.
I've seen you butter a Pop-Tart.
Well, yeah, it's cheat day, though. The carbs and sugars have to come out. The carbs and sugars have to come out for the plan to work. I can't emphasize that enough. Even sugar-free chewing gum can slow this plan down. You'd be better off doing this plan for less time at 100 PC than more time at 80 PC.
What's PC?
Compliance, maybe?
That's backwards. Compliance. Let's just go with that.
At 100%.
Oh, maybe that's it.
Then 80%. Yeah. Weird British-y article.
You know, there's a percent sign key. It's like the you know, it's the shift and the five.
Yes. Let's see. If you think you're going to cheat, just do it for 5 days fully. And when you come off of it, the key is to come off it completely. Don't hang on to craving having cream in your coffee.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, what? Why wouldn't you have cream in your coffee? Cream is fat.
Yeah, what, huh?
Despite its strictness, Zana is confident her home country will embrace... Actually, Britain is really looking at low-carb as a national diet plan. They're actually not being stupid about that. Fat-filled diet just as she has done. I gave the very first copy of the book to my mother, and she loves it, she laughs. It's going to be weird to see it on bookshelves when I visit home next month. Let's go, what you can eat. Beef burgers, processed sandwich style meat, sausages, tinned meats, breaded fish products, or canned. What you can't eat. What you can't eat. Beef burgers.
Unless 100% pure beef with no added wheat.
Oh, yeah, they do that sometimes. Processed sandwich style meats, sausages, tinned meats, breaded fish products, beans, and pulses. Low-fat cream cheese, milk and milk products like ice cream or any non-dairy alternative. Root vegetables, including celery, parsnips, and potatoes. Vegetables that can be caramelized, such as onions and shallots. All nuts and seeds not mentioned in the other list. Blah, blah, blah.
All fruits except avocado. Avocado is fine. The fattiest of the fruits. Yeah.
What you can eat. Beef, mince, ribs, steak, pork, poultry.
Including bacon.
Including bacon. Oily fish, eggs. Any full-fat cheese, yes. Halami? Is that like salami?
I don't know.
Green leafy veg, nuts and seeds, macadamia nuts, pine nuts, pumpkin seeds, walnuts.
Drink black tea, black tea or coffee.
I wonder if you can have watermelon. Buttercream, coconut oil, nut oils, olive oil.
Coffee.
Irish Independent.
You know, she made you promise not to show me that video.
Yeah. She listens to this podcast. Pretty good stuff. I find it funny that they're acting like this is new and created by an Irish woman. I'm like, Jimmy Moore, did you steal this idea from her?
No. I think she read the Keto Clarity and just pretended that it doesn't exist in Ireland.
Yeah. Good on her. Good for her spreading it. And if Ireland, if any country adopts a high fat, low carb diet as its dietary standards, a la food pyramid, that will be amazing for the movement.
I mean, I'm just glad to see that it's starting to spread globally. The myth about you can't eat fat because eating fat makes you fat is finally going the way of the dodo bird.
It's literally like the biggest conspiracy, greatest lie ever told to mankind, that's finally starting to sort of shudder a little bit. Like, I just don't get it. Like, there's mounting scientific evidence that says, hey, actually, it's kind of wrong. Fat doesn't make you fat. But people still hold... People just can't... I don't understand it. I don't understand why people won't just accept it. It's like saying, hey, this thing that tastes really good actually is good for you and helps you lose weight. It's like mind boggles. It's like, oh, no, I can't treat myself. I have to eat this wheat bran.
Oh, my God.
It's like decadence and... opulence is frowned upon. So I'm like, oh, what'd you eat for today? A package of bacon. Oh, you're gonna get fat and die, and you're gonna explode, and
your arteries,
weenie, will shrink up. Oh,
your weenie will shrink up?
Yeah.
I've heard that one.
Actually, oh, man. I think the term whiskey dick should also be applied to, like, wheat. Like, there's a lot of evidence that, like...
Weedy dick.
Weedy dick, yeah. Because it really does. Like, it's... It kills your sex drive.
Did you eat your Wheaties this morning? Yep, then you better tape a popsicle to it.
Yeah, and cholesterol.
Popsicle
and,
stick. Not but, a popsicle, that won't help a damn thing.
It also kills me how people are always super concerned about the wrong things. You know, they'll be like, they'll like drink 17 pounds of sugar, but oh God, I can't have caffeine. That's bad for you.
What?
Or people will sometimes think that if you eat, if you have a really good... hearty workout, you know, get out there and you work on the gym, that it's okay to come home and drink a 40 of beer and eat like a pack of Teddy Grahams.
Yeah. It just kills me. Like, seeing what people buy when they buy food just amazes me. And there's such a direct correlation between, obviously, the groceries you buy and you. Kills me.
You can tell he's been working on a register lately.
Yeah. So, yeah, high fat, low carb. It's taking the world.
Absolutely.
What do we got coming up in our wild edible of the week?
Well, our wild edible this week is black walnuts and butternuts. Black walnuts and butternuts are two species of the juglans genus, and the nuts of both taste similar. The name of the walnut family explains how highly regarded it was once. Juglans means in Latin the penis head of Jupiter. Whoa. Which one assumes implies fairly high praise for this nut. Description, habitat, and season. The leaves of both kinds of walnuts are alternate, once compounded with 7 to 17 pairs of light green serrated fragrant leaves and no tip leaflet, so that the visual effect from a distance is lacy or ferny. Black walnut trees grow all over town and all over the woods, as do, to a lesser extent, a related species called butternuts. The black walnut trees have long been prized for their elegant purplish wood and their solidity, regal shapes, and pretty light foliage. They grow 150 feet. They grow to 150 feet, have an have an aromatic odor that most find pleasant, and a deeply furrowed dark gray or blackish bark. Butternut trees, sometimes called white walnuts, are similar trees, but the fruits are more elongated, and the green fruits of the walnut and the trees have a lighter gray bark that is not as tightly furrowed. The nuts taste the same to me. Walnuts are the strongest flavored of our wild nuts. And that has been our wild edible for the week. You can have that back, you jackass.
The nuts taste the same to you, huh?
Yeah. What?
The nuts taste the same to you?
No, they taste the same to the bitch that wrote the book, okay? All right, now it is time for our permaculture minute. And this week's permaculture card from the permaculture playing cards deck from our good friend Paul Wheaton. I still feel bad for him, his show Firefly getting canceled.
Yeah.
Is the King of Diamonds. And the King of Diamonds in this deck is Bill Mollison.
Yay, Bill Mollison.
Bill Mollison coined the phrase permaculture. His book, Permaculture Designer's Manual, is considered the authoritative reference on permaculture. Mr. Mollison won the Right Livelihood Award in 1981, also referred to as the Alternative Nobel Prize for his work. Though the problems of the world are increasingly complex, the solutions remain embarrassingly simple. He is the founder of the Permaculture Research Institute. Bill Mollison has devoted his life to teaching permaculture. In his own words, permaculture is a conscious design of agriculturally productive ecosystems which have the diversity, stability, and resilience of natural ecosystems. And that has been our permaculture minute. Now, excuse me. If you have a lovely product out there that has anything to do with permaculture, survival, paleo, fitness,
meat, bacon,
anything like that, and you need a good home for it, you need a good place to get the word out, to advertise for that product, please contact us, james@survivalbunk.com. He can set up a great sponsor spot for you right at the front of our show, just like the other good sponsors that we have. and he takes many different forms of payment. He takes money. He takes bitcoins. He takes precious metals. He'll take meat. He'll take bartering. You've heard him barter on the show earlier for precious metals. So just...
Looks like a Saudi Arabian, I will take your women's. Oh, how much for your women's? Your women's. We want your women's. How much?
Oh. Oh, you're going to hell.
Oh, my God. Hold on. Quick contest. If you can name which movie I got that from, send me your shipping address to jamesferralpunk.com, and I'll mail you out a patch.
First person to respond with the correct answer gets the patch.
Yep.
Just contact him, james@survivalpunk.com.
I already know that Jeff Ratke's going to enter the patch. Use guys.
Oh. That's horrible. Now, if you're also looking to become something better than yourself, but belong to something more powerful than you could have ever imagined, an entity that could have taken down the Death Star without having the knowledge of zeroing Womp Rats and their T-1000 back home. I know that's the Metal Terminator, but I ran out of pop culture references.
What was that? What was that in The Princess Bride? Rodents of extreme size? What was it?
I don't remember. I've never seen that movie all the way through without falling asleep.
We're best friend breaking up.
Oh, fuck you. You know what? Fuck it. Then I'm not going to tell them about joining the Survival Punk Army.
Army does want you, though.
I'm not going to tell them about the exclusive stuff they get, about the zip files, 10 episodes each, about the savings they can get at 11 vendors from 10 to 20%.
The free ebooks, exclusive content, all the great stuff. I need you, Mike's wife, I need you to send me the video of me and Mike eating butter so I can put it up on the website.
We had our butter eating contest. You want to see it? You want to see me kick this asshole? You want to see him?
Actually, my piece was bigger, and I did swallow first.
Oh, you never mind. You want to know more details about it? You become a Survival Punk Army member. We have several different membership packages. Tell them about it.
Yeah, everything from $5 a month. Who doesn't have $5 a month? Who doesn't have $5? Everyone has $5 a month.
Those poor bastards up in Seattle that are having to get their wooden burning stones banned. They might not have it.
$5 a month. The best deal is $50 a year.
Think about it. $50 a year, $5 a month. That's like getting 2 months for free.
Yeah. And it's not like you get extra content that the people listening to the show don't, but the show and all the blog posts will always be free. If you like what we're doing, throw us some dollars. I mean, me and Mike, I don't pay this poor schlub for this job. He just does it. I just show up with a mic and tell him to talk.
Yeah, I'm going to be talking anyway.
Yeah. So, it all works out.
And we might actually see round two of that butter eating contest, this time with a whole stick. But just, you know, you go to the website. You're going to find links all over the place to join up with the Survival Punk Army. And you know why you should? Because the Survival Punk Army wants you!
Heck yeah.
Well, I think this has been a pretty good show.
Yes.
Except for you biting my head off about correcting you because you don't know how to, you know, pronounce the names of anything.
You totally said the wrong thing earlier. I can't remember what it was. It was like, word was managed and you said something completely that was not managed. It was an M word, but it was like, he's magnificent or some junk.
I did not say magnificent.
Whatever, you said something and,
Well, you know, it's, you know, okay, fine. I screwed up,
yeah,
so maybe a couple of times, especially while I was reading out of that damn book.
Point is, it's my show and I don't want you stepping over my feet. I'll let you read your point, you read my stuff, it's all good.
Okay, it's 1 to 1,000 here.
So, who do you want to invite on the show?
Who do I want to invite on the show?
It's your time, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm going to...
You didn't think of anyone.
What? No, what? I've got people in mind, damn it!
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I'm inviting all your ex-girlfriends on. How do you like that?
Six deadly exes.
Yeah, if you're any of James's six deadly exes, you have an open door, open ended invite onto the Survival Punk podcast, and if he won't let you on that one, I'll let you on over something on GadgetDataMind.com. Yeah. But I think that's going to do it for us and for another wonderful, our 1 year anniversary episode of the Survival Punk Podcast. Yes. And no, we didn't do a clip show, if you were wondering if we were going to do that. We're not pussies.
No. So thanks for everyone for listening. We appreciate it highly. Your emails, your comments are so welcome and so appreciated.
Whenever we get a really nice email from someone that loves the show and they love what we're doing and they think it's awesome, I immediately have to call up Mike and be like, Mike, listen to this email. You gotta listen to this. And you can like, you can just tell like Mike's cheesing on the phone line. He's like, they like what we're doing. You know, cause we just figured we're two assholes. Who's gonna listen to us? People listen to us.
That still fucking amazes me that people actually do listen to us.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm pseudo famous now.
Pseudo famous.
I want to be more than pseudo famous, though. I want these guys to take me to the. I want these guys and use guys and all those guys to take me to the next level. But for this 1 year anniversary edition of the Survival Punk podcast, I am Couch Potato Mike.
And this is James Survival Punk.
And if you think the first year was great, wait till you get a load of the next one.
DIY to survive.
Use guys.